Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 65 of the Nerd Cantina Show. Today we have a Cantina conversation with Grant Newell, and in this conversation we cover some topics that are new to Steve and I. We discuss online wagering on various esports through the Players Lounge, and we also talk about the impressive growth and some of the economic drivers behind esports in general. So if you're in any way an esports fan, or you're just amazed at how much money and fame is being had by esports players, stick around for our conversation with Grant.
Calling back all nerds. Nerds!
All right, and welcome nerds to the Cantina Conversation today with Grant Newell. And just a quick understanding, what we're trying to do here with this conversation is Grant is an esports enthusiast, we'll call it, and he's really deeply into kind of the financials, some of those deeper topics than just playing Fortnite or whatever the surface level esports games have. So we're looking forward to this conversation, and we'll allow Grant to give a quick introduction on who he is and how he got involved in this esports business here.
Yeah, so I am a former college football player, and I was looking for an outlet to sort of gauge that competitiveness that I had. And that's how I found esports. And I was already playing video games, always kind of had a joy for finding ways to make money doing things that I loved. And that's how I stumbled into esports and making money through different revenue sources and different ways of playing.
So now, was this in competitive tournaments, or are we talking wadded up 20s on dorm room floors?
Yeah, so you know, it started out, you know, on the in the dorm room floors, you know, just the guys hanging out, and we would just play till all hours of the night, trying to just mess around and before game.
I've won a few and lost a few Hamiltons on Madden 98. I will say that.
See, now I started playing back on the Dreamcast, if you guys remember that.
Oh yeah.
Yes, so that's kind of where I started. But then it was probably my senior year of college at Oklahoma State when sort of the esports realm started to kind of get going a little bit, and I moved back here to Dallas, and that's when they were building the esports stadium in Arlington over by the Cowboys Stadium, and I said, okay, I got to figure out how to make money doing this because, you know, I wasn't playing college football anymore, and so that competitive energy needed some sort of outlet.
What year did they start building that stadium? When was that about?
Probably 2016, like early 2017.
Yeah, so fairly new, and obviously that's kind of the time frame as we start to blow up here in the U.S. We've seen esports stadiums and stuff have existed in South Korea for quite a while, as that's been a popular sport for them, but really didn't gain popularity for us last 5 years, right? Is where we're looking at.
Yeah. And, you know, what I started to notice was there's different versions of it. So, you know, there's people that play, you know, professionally that's their job. You know, they do that all day long. And then somebody like myself, I've started to venture into the streaming. But really, I've gotten into sort of the gambling, I guess, as you could call it, within esports.
Is this through like legal avenues? Like, are there actual sports books in Vegas you can go in and bet on the Overwatch League, bet on the League of Legends tournament? Like, is this all sanctioned through you know, the gambling entities?
As far as gambling on that, I don't do it in Vegas. What I do is a thing called Players Lounge. If you guys are familiar with that, it's basically like this online, I guess you could call it chat room, game room, whatever you want to call it. But basically, they bring people together and you say, hey, I want to bet $50 on this game. And so you'll play somebody and somebody will pick up the game and you guys will play each other. And then via PayPal, the system will pay the winner.
And, you know, so this is like a lot of head-to-head side matches, like taking the dorm room gambling on video games into an online market.
Yep. Yeah. So on a bigger scale, so that, you know, you can play. I mean, so there are people that I've talked to that play all day long, and that's like their way of, you know, making a living off of it. So, I mean, it's gotten, you know, some really good notoriety, and it's gotten a lot better even within the past year. I know we were talking earlier about some of the big players that, as far as driving the financial realm of this, Players Lounge got Drake, the music artist, to invest in Players Lounge. And with that, we got a lot of improvements to the system. And I mean, it's really blown up since that.
Now, is this something done with like Bitcoin, or is it just like, yeah, like, because people are coming, you know, there's all different kinds of currencies, you know, with the being on the internet, you got people in Norway wanting to play FIFA against people in Brazil, you know what I mean? And I don't know what those fucking exchange rates are, but, you know, like, so I'm assuming a PayPal service or some kind of monetary service is attached with this.
Yeah. So it's done via PayPal. Within the last month or so, you can put your credit card on there too. So, you know, you can run up your
PayPal
credit card.
Does the conversions. Yeah. PayPal does the conversions. So,
yeah. Luckily, they don't send me like, you know, euros or something, and I got to go exchange that. It's, you know, already done for me.
Yeah, I got like 100,000 yen riding on this Street Fighter 2 match.
Yeah.
Now, and I'm assuming to Players Lounge, I'm assuming takes some level of cut for every bet or every transaction that takes place throughout the system, and that's got to be their business model.
Yeah, is that unfortunately, true? they take 20%. Of they take a good chunk.
That's a chunk. That's
they
a
definitely
chunk.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm,
it's
like
more than I would have assumed.
You know, my hope is once they kind of get to a level where there's, you know, thousands and thousands of people playing, maybe they'll go back. Probably won't. But
I just see some digital Italian. That's a hefty vig. Uncle Paulie sitting behind a computer taking his cut, man.
Yeah.
But I imagine it legitimizes it better. So I recently watched kind of a documentary that talked about esports gaming and the growth of it. And like original betting started like with like Counter-Strike Go and stuff like that, where people were selling like rare skins and offering up different rare skins in games. And then they were selling those in aftermarket because that was one of the games that you could sell and you could transact skins. So people were betting on individual games and doing that. And this is a better system, whether you got to pay the vig or not. In the end, you have to have some level of structure that's going to provide you some reliability that you're going to actually get your money.
Yeah, and that was kind of one of my things was, at first I was kind of like, all right, is this real? Like, you know, am I really going to get paid if I put my credit card on here? Are they going to, you know, swipe it? And but I do agree that, yeah, okay, it's hefty, but at the same time, I know that I'm going to get my money, and I know that nothing's going to get stolen.
So now, does this service do any kind of like matchmaking for you? So I imagine, you know, there's handicaps with everything. So is it just, you know, your luck of the draw, who you play against? You know, like, is it one of those things where, you know, I'm a 4-star player, someone else is a 2-star player, and a 4-star is going to play a 2-star? You know, how do they figure out that I'm not just handing $50 over because I'm playing way above my skill level?
Right, so there's some accountability there. They will rank you based on your scores against the opponents. And so, you know, after each game, you have to submit a screenshot of the game that you just played to upload, and then you put in the score. And so, you know, based on at the beginning how good or bad you beat somebody, that's what level they put you at.
So how does that play into game strategy? Because now I'm not running up the score on nobody. You know, like if I'm in Madden and I'm up by 14, Like, I'm not going to make it 21. I'm not trying to, you know, up my rank level like that. So,
yeah.
Do you see guys in game taking a knee in the fourth quarter? Like, how are we doing this?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, for me, I've kind of played the strategy of I don't want to get to the level 4 or 5. So it goes 1 through 5.
Okay.
And so, you know, if I realize I'm going to beat somebody bad, you know, I'll punt on first down, you know, like as soon as I get the ball.
That's bogus.
That's what I'm saying.
No, you're so shitty.
But you know, I'm like, hey, you know what? If that's how I can make some money, you know what? No. You know, at the end of the day, it comes down to strategy and whatever, you know, if you want to run up the score.
Yeah, there's an argument. Like, I just punted the ball on first down. Get your offense up, son.
Right.
Come get these points. I'm basically taunting you.
You know, at some point it's like, I'm beating you. I'm still beating you as bad if I'm punting on first down, but at the same time, it's like, oh man, if I don't want to go play the fives, you know, the people.
Yeah,
that
no,
play all
that's
day
what
long.
I'm saying. There's got to be there. The minute you said I knew there was instantly some kind of game strategy to not. If you're a three, you're going to do everything in your power to stay at three. You're not trying to bump up to the four,
right?
And I'm already trying to think of like if I was playing that system, you know, for every $200 bet I win, I'm gonna go intentionally lose a $10 one and just call that a wash.
Smarter.
And just keep
they're smarter than that. So based on the game, so like if I go win $200 and then go lose like $5, $10 ones, I'll stay. I won't like go down a level or go up. It stays the same because they realize, okay, he's trying to, the system is somewhat smart.
Well, in like Overwatch, right, what we had a problem was is people creating Smurf accounts. So you're a level 5, but then you open up another gamer tag and you just lose your first 30 matches intentionally. So that then all of a sudden now you're a rank 4, you're a rank 2 when you shoot, but you're really playing as a 5, you know.
Right.
We had a big problem in Overwatch with Smurf accounts. Do you have Smurf accounts
Yeah, so they, you know, going back to their 20%, they've done really good with their 20%. They will actually tag your IP address. So, like, you know, if you log in to a different account on the same IP address, they'll flag your account.
Really?
So, you know, they've because I was curious of that. And so I was like, well, I need to figure out if, you know, somebody else can just go be a 5 and go be a 1 and just kill everybody. It was after I got killed by a 1 once. So I was like, all right, there's no way this person's a 1. You know, and so then I went and created a different account. I think they were just new on the system and the system hadn't caught on. But because whenever I logged into a different account, it flagged me and wouldn't let me log in. And so they've made sure that you can't necessarily do that. I'm sure there's people that are smarter around that, you know, hiding their IP address.
So with Drake getting on board, it has some celebrity backing. Right. They're obviously getting a little bit established. What are the numbers public on this? Like how much is being exchanged monthly through a program like this? Like what is the 20% adding up to? Is this a really viable business? Are we going to see more and more organizations like this popping up with, you know, all kinds of celebrity gamers now wanting to get in on a new market?
Yeah, I mean, they haven't made the numbers public, but based off of the number of people that are playing, you know, it tells you how many people are in the waiting room or lobby, as they call it. And I mean, there's hundreds of people, you know, waiting for games. And, you know,
what's the average game play for? What's the average bet?
You know, they start all the way at $1 and you can bet all the way up to $500.
Oh, we're playing for a buck.
Some people will play for $1. You know, some people will go play for $1. I'm like, man, I'm not going to waste an hour if playing for $1.
Playing for a buck.
Yeah. So
that's some kid in India trying to get
that's where I live.
Yeah, that's where you live.
That's
all day,
me.
Mr. fucking penny slot.
Yeah. You know, I'm probably playing like a 10-year-old that his mom gave him $1 to get on here.
That's what I mean.
So, So, I mean, you bring up the 10-year-old, but this is where, you know, I wonder, you know, just like when online betting became legal and then all of a sudden people's accounts were getting frozen because the legality was in question, right? This online competitive gaming, it's right now operating under the loophole that it's a game of skill, right? Because it requires skill. So they're classifying it under game of skill, which makes it legal to wager. That loop may close because people are afraid of the 10-year-olds racking up mom. You just said they're taking credit cards, right? 10-year-old getting mom's credit card is a big problem. And do you and in the industry worry about, hey, the legality of this, that this door just may shut at some point or be incredibly regulated?
Yeah, so, you know, I have had some experience in being in something that the legality was kind of in the gray area and it got shut down. So I had made a good amount off Bitcoin and got on this lending platform called BitConnect. And it basically lent out Bitcoin. And, you know, I was on there for probably 3 or 4 months. And then one day I log on to kind of see, you know, how much money I had made. And it said, the state of Texas has issued a cease and desist. Your account is completely frozen. And so I lost everything in it. So, you know, I've seen that.
And that's what happened to like online poker and stuff, right? That operated under the same rule, that it was a game of skill. Poker was considered a game of skill. And then one day they closed the door and a bunch of online poker guys who had thousands of dollars in accounts, they got frozen.
Right. Yeah. So after my experience, I sweep my account every day.
I spent all back into PayPal. Fool me once, Uncle Sam. Yeah. Shame on me. Fool me once, motherfucker.
Yeah. So, you know, for me, I'm like, I'm sweeping my account every single day so that I don't ever, you know, have to, you know, if I lose $100, whatever, you know, Uncle Sam can have my $100. But, you know, there is always that concern that, you know, I mean, they change the laws all the time on anything. And so, because I'm sure there are definitely underage people probably playing.
Well, the Supreme Court just ruled in favor of sports gambling.
Right.
And made that legal. So I'm wondering how that's going to affect the esports realm. Because what you worry about is like, so you're in head-to-head competition, right?
Right.
So there's really no benefit to throwing a game in head-to-head competition unless you're trying to subvert the ranking system like we just talked about.
Right.
But if we're ever going to gamble on the Overwatch League, the League of Legends, the Fortnite tournaments, the things that can be susceptible to, you know, rigging a game or throwing a game based on interest, how do you see that playing out in the future? Is obviously if it's popular, which esports is getting popular, gambling is going to follow right behind it. So do you see any mechanisms already being put in place to kind of thwart that? Or
yeah, so, you know, I think with how new it is, everybody's just so excited about it. I don't think they're as much in place. You know, I've been to the tournaments before at this new stadium up here in Arlington this past fall for a Madden tournament. And I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of dollars on the line to play for. So, you know, you definitely run that risk of, you know, somebody throwing a game or whatever. But, you know, I think my more concern is somebody hitting the internet, you know, in that area, because, you know, you have something like that happening and it totally screws everybody.
So you're more worried about lag and a DDoS attack than anything else.
You know, when you're relying on a game or a system.
tell that to anybody that bets against the Packers.
Aaron Rodgers Hail Marys at the end of the game. You know? Yeah, so, but I mean,
the refs just stroke that dude.
Him and Tom Brady. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I think about stuff like that and it's like, man, you know, could somebody lose a game because it glitches up and, you know, they're so fast to it that, you know, I've had times where if you go too fast for the system, it'll lag the whole thing. And then, you know, somebody scores a touchdown because your cornerback jumped too fast, you know, and
So you're basically relying on Xbox Live, PlayStation Network, any of these just normal services to just be on par.
Google Stadia. Fuck.
I pay just, extra just
burn,
for my
just
internet.
Burn your money. Just burn your fucking money if you're playing on Google Stadia. but yeah, you're essentially relying on these networks to be up to par because there is no regulated network that you can play through the gambling sites or anything like that, right?
Right. Well, and you know, I think it's esports has the potential to just explode and even be bigger than, you know, regular professional sports. Maybe not, you know, as one scale, you know, like the NFL or NBA, but because they
hockey fans are going to be fucking mad.
Well, I mean,
hockey fans going to be fucking mad.
That was going to be my argument is the last championships for League of Legends, the big Fortnite event they had more viewership, not than the Super Bowl, but they had more viewership than all of the NHL playoffs, than the deciding game of the NBA playoffs. They do have a greater viewership. They're just not as engaged as in like their fandom. They're not as monetizable right now, but the viewership is already there.
Well, and I think as you grow, you know, and because with esports, I don't think there'll be just one league like NHL, NBA, NFL, like just one league. I think there'll be, you know, 15, 20 leagues, but the span of it.
But that's the downside of esports.
But the span of it is going to be bigger than, you know, regular professional sports.
Yeah, I think you need like one cohesive group with a commissioner that oversees the different branches of games. Because if you just leave, I see a lot of up and coming games or smaller niche games that still have a large audience never being able to hit that like peak viewership and peak appeal because they have the burden of having that infrastructure that's going to be needed to support an esports league. So I think if you leave Blizzard to just run the Overwatch League, if you leave EA to just run the Madden League, I think that you're leaving a lot on the table to whereas if all these groups can just look at themselves as, you know, like NFL owners and come under one solid umbrella, I think that would advance esports 10 times faster, have the ceiling, you know, way higher of what's capable to achieve.
Right. And I mean, you know, you always have a bigger scale when you get billionaires backing the games and the leagues, you know, just like all of the professional sports, once they had these multimillionaires that are now billionaires shoving their money into the sports, it automatically made things better. The stadiums were nicer, the food and all of that. And I think esports could get there, and it's, you know, it I think it's a long ways off, but I think it could.
Yeah, and I mean, there is already some of that significant celebrity money that exists in some of these esports. You know, it costs, I think it's greater than $40 million now to buy an Overwatch League franchise. It's $25 million to buy a Call of Duty franchise. You have money coming from like some really big people like Tony Robbins and Magic Johnson have bought a team. Shaquille O'Neal, Jimmy Rollins, and Alex Rodriguez. Rick Fox owns a training camp and a team in League of Legends. I mean, Jerry Jones owns a team. Like,
these are the most
down there in Dallas. You got Jerry
names,
owning
though.
A team.
Over the place.
But they're big money. But you
30
see it
years
with,
ago, these
so
people
the
are in a
the
convention
Cleveland Browns.
Room signing baseball cards.
But you do see institutional money. The owner of the 76ers owns a team. The Cleveland Browns owner owns a team. Robert Kraft owns an esports team, and so does Jerry Jones. Like, they do see the future potential. But then on the other side, you have guys like Mark Cuban, also there in Dallas, who has come out and said he will never own an esports team, that it's a foolish and awful investment, and that the growth of the company, the problem is because these developers, they own the leagues, they own the rules, they own the football itself, right? They own the actual game that people are playing on, and they control all the cards. So you can dump $50 million into this franchise and team, and then they'll change the metrics of the game, or that game loses popularity.
And that's what I mean, why they're going to have to come under one overseen umbrella with a commissioner and whatnot. Like, the developers, for the sake of promoting their brand, for promoting gaming in general, are going to have to loosen up the reins on that type of control. Not creative control, but the way that the game is infrastructured and make it cohesive, you know, and accessible to owners. Like, that, yeah, that's a large investment to just have kind of waving in the wind of the whims of a couple guys in a boardroom at Blizzard, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, think if you spend $40 million on an Overwatch League team, and let's say Overwatch 2 comes out and it just sucks, and it just flops, and the game quickly loses popularity because the next hot thing comes out, I don't know what your return on investment is at that point.
Motherfuckers still play Dota. Like, yeah, that's what, Overwatch 2 sucks, fine. They'll just keep playing Overwatch 1. Like, you go on Halo 2 servers right now and get a game like what? Seriously, some of these franchises, if it's that good, like, yeah, we'll give 2 a shot. But if 2 sucks and we don't like it and you can't fix it, we'll just keep playing the fucking one we like.
Right.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it's still profitable. It doesn't mean that it's still worth a valuation of these franchises at $40 million.
And I mean, you know, you have to look at it 10 years from now. If they're still playing, you know, the first Overwatch, you know, people aren't going to want to watch that. They're like, the graphics are out of date. No, you know,
people might want to play it still.
You know, the whole thing is are you going to get viewers to tune into Halo 2? Probably not, you know. And so, I agree with you guys that somebody has got to come in and either buy the game. These leagues have got to purchase the rights to design and do the game. But, you know, you're always at the mercy of how good or bad the game is as compared to professional sports. You know, like football, you got a football, basketball, you got a basketball, hockey, you got a puck.
Well, it's still kind of the same in football. I mean, look at the evolution of football over the last 30 years with the revelations of CTE, how much we've changed. You know, Tom Brady blows out a knee, we totally revamp how you sack a quarterback.
Right.
After one knee gets blown out, you know, we've drastically changed the game. And you've heard fans say, you know, this isn't the football that I remember. I don't like it. Right. You know, but guess what, Al? You watched the Super Bowl, didn't you?
Yeah.
But people are still going to voice those gripes. So games do evolve. Even football, baseball, basketball, these games have all evolved throughout the years. I think, you know, if we focus too much on the minutia of the actual individual games rather than esports in general, just being, you know, video games as a whole, I think we could get lost in the minutia. You know, like there's League of Legends hasn't changed that much in how long. It's still the same.
Right.
You know, graphics have been updated. They've introduced a few new characters, but the main strategy and gameplay is held out throughout over a decade.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, the cool thing about it is that anybody can do it at the professional level. You know, I think about, you know, because I love to play Madden and football. Somebody that, you know, is in a wheelchair and just physically can never play the game of football, but they love it, could go be a professional esports player. And, you know, that's pretty cool.
I do think that drives the popularity, is the accessibility. Just the fact that people see an avenue that drives, obviously, some of that significant popularity and growth at the player level. And like I said, we'll see over time.
Well, yeah, maybe
looks
it turns
like
into something where things are broken down into first person shooters, sports games, like certain aspects and home team gets to pick the game. So if you're playing, if you're playing Dallas, you're playing Call of Duty. The minute you play in Chicago, now you're playing Overwatch. If you play right. in some other city, they pick, you know, their strength game. But no matter where you play, you, it's all random, but it's all first person shooter based, or it's all, you know, fighting game based, and you got to really prove yourself as a gamer by being more versatile rather than just knowing how to play one character on one fucking game really
The video game version of a decathlon.
You know what I mean? Like, who knows where they take this? But in order to hit that mass audience, that might be something you have to do. So if you're in the first person shooter category and Overwatch 2 comes out and it sucks, you just don't have any Overwatch games, but your first person shooter division still thrives, because no matter what, there's going to be two or three bomb ass games, you know, and we maybe have to change what we look as what do we call an esports athlete? A nerd. I don't know. Like, what are we branding ourselves here? You know,
right. Yeah, and I mean, the crazy thing is now you can get a scholarship to go to college for esports.
And yeah, I know a kid who's got a scholarship to Robert Morris. We had at C2E2 last year, DePaul had a big booth at the Chicago Comic Con, showing off their esports division and scholarship program. Now, this is DePaul University. Yeah, it's a major university in Chicago.
It's crazy, you know, to think that you can get a scholarship for playing video games now.
Yeah, I mean, it is like on the individual level, stepping out of kind of these institutionalized sports debates, but on the individual level, yeah, the kids that are playing video games that are looking for being hopefuls and scholarships, these opportunities are growing. They're not shrinking. Like out here by me in Southern California, UC Irvine is a very popular school. Not only can you get a scholarship to play for UC Irvine, but they also have a major that you can get an undergraduate and a master's degree on esports. Like it's becoming something, just the business model itself and the growth of the industry is becoming something worth studying and pursuing. So it's at the individual level, it's pretty crazy. And that kind of brings, you know, another topic I want to talk about was like the Twitch, Mixer, Facebook Watch, all these different avenues that individuals have. And just kind of want to get your thoughts on really, where do you see the growth of that going as it goes, and the competition between the three?
Yeah, well, and YouTube just came in probably a couple weeks ago with their own that they're going to be doing. And so, you know, I think you have these big players that, you know, you always have first to the market, like somebody like Netflix. They were first, and now you have Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, ESPN Plus. You know, you have this slew of them. And I think, you know, it forces them to be better. Like Twitch was good. It's gotten a lot better now that other ones have come and they have the competition. But I think, you know, it's always better to just have one.
So I look at the streamers as more of entertainers, right? So people like to watch them play. A lot of them have gimmicks. They do, you know, things for their audiences to get more donations and things like that. As a professional gamer, do you look at Twitch and all these other streaming avenues as a way to make more revenue? Or do you look at it as a way to give your competition ways to scout you? Like if I'm a boss, you know, professional player that makes my money from beating other players and on the gambling avenue, I'm not trying to give anybody a chance to see what fucking buttons I'm pushing, what plays I'm picking.
Right.
Like you could fucking go somewhere like at any of these tournaments. I don't want nobody playing with an eye over my shoulder, right, you know, trying to figure out a strategy to get in on me. So like as a professional gamer, do you still see streaming as an avenue to monetize, or is that something you think people would stay away from?
Well, you know, I think as long as, you know, some of these channels, like obviously Ninja is getting paid to be on Mixer, you know, I think as long as they are paying you to be on there, people will always do it. you know, same with influencers on Instagram or any other social media.
But do you see the professionals, like the, not the entertainer? So like Ninja's an entertainer,
right?
You know, he dyes his hair. He's a lively guy. You know, you can see what he's going for.
Right.
But like a guy that plays for $1,000 a match, do you see him wanting to stream on his off time?
Not necessarily, because, you know, you're not going to get as many people to donate as you could making $1,000 in one game, you know. And, you know, maybe if you, cause I mean, people watch anything nowadays. I tuned into Twitch the other day and somebody was practicing on Madden and he had like 500 people watching. So, you know, it's like, he's just practicing. So, you know, I mean, if I try and do practice.
Yeah. You talking about practice?
Exactly. Yeah, that's my thing. I'm like, practice? People are watching him play practice. And, you know, so I mean, if you can get people to watch you practice, I mean, you might as well, you know, make some money while you're practicing and then go play, you know, because some people just like to see people play good. I mean, I try and stay away from the streaming just because I don't like to give away a lot of tips and tricks on it. Just because in Madden,
Do you see this ever going like the UFC or boxing route to where, you know, you're the number one Madden streamer and they take the number two Madden streamer and some corporate sponsor, Monster or, you know, 5 Hour Energy, something to get these kids buzzed and never sleeping. Fucking you think they would throw down a purse and have kind of like turn this into not like a league, yeah, but more of a, you know, kind of a match thing, like as in UFC or boxing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, if you have two top people that, you know, your people are following, you're going to say, well, yeah, I want to watch them. I'll pay to get on to watch them. I mean, just like pay-per-view. I mean, you have people that'll pay, what is it, like 10, 20 bucks to tune in and they make billions of dollars doing it. I mean, I think if, you know, 10 years down
the road. Yeah, well, I'm just thinking because all our comparisons so far have been to the NFL, the NBA, the hockey, you know, like,
right.
What if the avenue for a lot of these competitive sports aren't through competitive seasons or leagues, well, and it's more of, you know, you take the most popular names and you make these names play against each other.
So we did kind of get that already with the big Fortnite event that had the largest purse for any individual event that took place. And that was by invitation only. That was the top 100 people and duels or whatever else. But they had Twitter followers. They were people that were, yes, they had good records, but they were by invitation largely because of their following and everything else. And then Fortnite put together that massive battle royale that resulted in that 16-year-old winning an ungodly amount of money. But everybody who participated and was invited received some money as a part of that purse because it was invitation only based off of popularity and other metrics. So we've already seen that with Fortnite because Fortnite doesn't have a league. They're different than League of Legends and everybody else. That's a team-based game that has leagues, that has seasons, that has things. Fortnite as an individual battle royale model, they've got to do something different. They're not really considered in the same class as the other esports.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you get into that, you know, it's, you have the tournaments and a lot of like men will have play-in tournaments. So if you get, you know, top, I want to say it's like 10 in the smaller tournaments or play-in tournaments as they call it, then you get invited to the headquarters in like Florida or something, wherever the EA Sports headquarters is, and then they have a championship. So it's kind of like by invitation only type thing, and I think it's getting to that. But, you know, getting to the status of a UFC or boxing, you know, I don't know if anybody's going to take home a purse like Floyd Mayweather, but...
But I was thinking more along structure lines. So like even the way you're describing Madden now, it's pretty anonymous. It's just winners get stacked up with more winners, get stacked with more winners. I'm right. Thinking along the lines of, you know, this guy may not be the best Madden player, but he's the most popular Madden player.
Okay.
So we're gonna take this guy and put him against another popular Madden player who may not have a chance of winning one of those 1,000 member tournaments, but because he wears a neon green cowboy hat with some doilies on his shoulders or some shit, and he's got 2.8 million followers. They make him play the other guy, and they put up a $100,000 purse to have that match and have it streamed on a YouTube or a Twitch and gets corporate sponsorships from a Pepsi or, you know, a Taco Bell or something like All that. Right. Like I, you know, there's many avenues I think this can pivot in, and I'm just wondering where, you know, it's going to go wherever the money right. leads it to. Right. You know, so if talent isn't what's driving people to esports and it's gimmicks and popularity, I can see it going the, you know, you need the Conor McGregor version of a Madden player to, you know, to go up against another guy that just has a huge following, be it whether his following is based on talent or just sheer entertainment value.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right. It's really wherever the marketing and advertising dollars go. You know, if there's going to be a large viewing, you know, a Budweiser and, you know, Coca-Cola, they're going to try and get in there at, you know, we'll pay $100,000 to have an advertisement, you know, in between the matches type of thing. And, you know, you get those type of things, and that's when stuff starts to really go.
Yeah, because Ninja hit his major status once he got a big bump because he played in that game with Drake and like ASAP Rocky and a whole bunch of other people. And it was when that hit the internet and a professional gamer was tied with mass celebrity
right.
that propelled Ninja to a whole nother level to where, like, yeah, Ninja's the most popular Fortnite player, but did he win? Did he beat that 16-year-old?
No.
Fuck no, he didn't. He didn't. But he's got a bigger contract. He's got the name recognition. He's got all that. So who is the audience going to watch play next week? Are they going to watch that 16-year-old or are they going to watch fucking right. Ninja?
Well, and I think it's a combo of both. It's you have to be entertaining,
yeah, a little bit of both.
Yet good. You know, nobody wants to watch somebody that really sucks, but they also don't want to watch somebody that just sits there and, you know, goes at the controller. They want you to entertain them, but also be good at the game.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting on where the money is shaping out in this industry. Cause yeah, you've got on the individual level, the Twitch streamers, whatever else. And that's why when you're talking about like, would you do it? Do you tip giving up tips, whatever else? Yeah. But in the end, you can almost never beat just right. building a brand, because Ninja can hang up playing for a while and still make money based off of his brand that he's established. So I could see that this is going to continue to go. And, you know, with Amazon owning Twitch, Facebook is now trying to entice their own streamers and people to come and join their streaming network. I think Ronda Rousey announced like last week, she's wow. going to be streaming games and doing other things as a part of that. Like they're having their own streaming service. Talk about YouTube getting in the game. There's so much money that's getting put into
cool
just
to be a nerd now. Yeah, it's cool to be a nerd. You know, you got Henry Cavill talking about plays The Witcher and everybody just loves that he was a nasty yeah. gamer that it's coming out now. So like now you got like all these celebrities that read comics when the doors are closed and are playing, you know, these video games, all peeking their head around the corner like, oh, this is cool now? It's okay?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no, I play that game. I play that game.
They went in the back of their mansions and played it, and then...
Yeah, so as more and more of that happens, I see the future of gaming not really relying on the best of the best. You'll always have those tournaments. You know, there's people want to know who the number one is in the world is, but I see the big money just going to the people that... You know, Ninja versus the latest Boobs McGee with a headset, and they just put a big fucking purse right, up to the winner. Right.
Yeah, I'm sure that that's going to happen at some point in time, and it might get put together by the streaming services themselves, right? Amazon wants to keep people on the Twitch platform as they were losing guys like Ninja to go to Mixer and stuff like that. So that might be a way that they entice people, that they have their own way of valuing and rewarding top streamers on their channels and within certain categories, so that might be a way that you see money kind of sneak in. Another sneaky place for money is, I wanted to ask you, you're a big Madden guy. What do you think of the Pizza Hut Stadium as the first virtual stadium that exists in Madden, right? You were seeing money creeping everywhere. The first ever virtual stadium, there's the Pizza Hut Stadium in Madden that, hey, Pizza Hut doesn't need to go build an actual $1 billion stadium or sponsor that. They write just some put code. Some trons yeah, in some there code. And they still get the notoriety. They still get put in tournaments. They still get eyeballs viewing their stadium.
Like you said, it only goes up from there because, you know, you get people like Pizza Hut. And if Pizza Hut comes out in a year and their revenue is skyrocketed, you know, then people are going to be like, oh, hey, this works. Let's do this. You know, now we have a, you know, Taco Bell, you know, player, you know, the lead of Fortnite.
We said too, with a lot of streaming services going commercial free, you can have the commercial free options. Advertising is vastly changing just because we're not just glued to our TVs on a 7 o'clock on a Thursday because, you know, it's must see TV anymore. It, you know, their product placement in music videos, video games, in the background of what we are already consuming is becoming more and more prevalent. So with that, yeah, you're gonna see big ass Coke billboards on Call of Duty maps. You're gonna see, yeah, like I see the future of these things, and I would like to see some of that money trickle into the professional infrastructure, not just go to the developers and the people making these games. Right. Like, I would like to see a portion of that advertisement revenue go to streaming platforms and streamers because they are, you know, what are keeping that game vibrant, what are keeping people to go to that game, watching that stream with that in it. So I, you know, it's we're at a, you know, the birthing stage of all this right now. And I think these are the discussions that need to be had by fans, gamers, developers, you know, aspiring owners. This needs to get worked out before it ends up being maybe one of the drivers that kind of handicaps the growth of esports in general.
Yeah.
And so let's take a second here and we can try to play, you know, we call it here when we make predictions that Steve is Nerdstradamus, and Nerdstradamus gets to forecast the future. But where do you see the future of esports? Like, where is it 5-10 years from now? Where do you see kind of both the growth on really where you're living, right, in that gambling model? Does it become more prevalent?
Does it get shut down?
Do you see more people, more more options than just like Players Lounge or whatever else, as we see the success there? Does it grow? And where do you see the direction of
think,
esports?
You know, as far as what I'm in, as far as the gambling with Players Lounge, I there'll probably be some more regulations on it. You know, they'll probably require that you be at least 18 years, you know, just like any gambling, you have to be 18 years or older to play, type of thing.
Do they not require that now?
It's loose. You know, they're like, do you agree that you're 18 or older?
It's like a porn site. Are you 18? Yeah. Yup. Yeah, sure, like, am.
You know, it's like the whole check mark. Are you over 18? Yeah. Okay. You know, yep. Who's going to say no?
Yeah, so they might need to do some kind of like ID verification or something in the future.
I'm wondering if like in the future of it, so my girlfriend takes online courses, and when she takes her tests, she has to have a webcam showing her the whole time. There's some call center in India where these people are watching her take this test in real time, so they can see her hands. They can see she doesn't have her phone with her. Like, there's like a verification process of who the person is in front of the computer and what they're doing. Like, do you see something like that intricate going to regulate this gambling model to make sure that some number, you know, level 5 isn't playing on somebody else's number level 1 Smurf account 3 blocks away? Like, my cousin sucks, and when I go for Thanksgiving, I'm just going to play on my cousin's account and win a quick $1,000. You know what I mean? Before I go back home. Like, do you see a day where you got to have the webcam set up in front of you so they can verify that it's you playing this game right now?
I think, you know, like, the way that I see it is it'll merge with the streaming. So, you know, you'll have to stream yourself playing the game so that, you know, in a sense, they're verifying you, but, you know, you're streaming.
Yeah, it'd be essentially the same thing. Yeah. letting the public verify as opposed to some poor Indian lady working for 17 cents an hour.
You know, like the viewers are like, okay, this isn't Grant playing, you know, this is, you know, Joe down the street. So, you know, you can't do that, but I think they'll end up merging together, you know, with the way today's market is, one will buy the other and then they'll do it, you know, virtually together. But I think that's kind of what I see there. But you know, as far as esports in general, I see it just, you know, maybe getting to the global level, you know, to where, you know, you start playing a Fortnite tournament in China, you know, versus, you know, the US versus China.
So you'd like to see it go Olympics route and be more inclusive and more global.
So the Olympic Committee is already they're already voting on whether to include it in the 2024 Olympics. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's already up for
the
vote.
The fact that they're trying to look at whether that's a sport.
Yeah, so I think, you know, eventually it'll get to that level. You know, you'll have the best Fortnite, Call of Duty players going over to China, Japan.
How mad are you if you're a female softball player right now? they're trying to cut that program every year. And the next file they open is like possible esports in the Olympics.
Oh man.
If you're an underhand pitcher, you mad? Like you mad to a motherfucker.
Oh man.
Send your hate mail to Steve at thenerdcantina.com.
Oh man!
But yeah, I think globally it's already there in some of these leagues, right? League of Legends and Dota, they do have a global reach. I mean, there's people internationally watching it at a very high level. Again, we're late to the game when you compare us to Asian countries on their adoption of esports in general. We already had, what was it, Overwatch League already had essentially their World Cup where they had representatives come from other countries, whatever else, trying to include that globalization. So I think absolutely in the next 5-10 years, we're going to see it. I think we are going to get to a point where the sport as a whole is going to have to legitimize itself as a sport and not a bunch of segmented different leagues. I watched a talk with some developers and the CEOs of these different developers, and they're all trying to come up with the next esport league. Every one of them is saying they're developing games with this mindset of how do we create an esport around our next game.
Do you see?
And it's going to get
do
ugly.
Do you see the? This is pretty much my last kind of curious question. Do you see professional gaming driving cross-platform? Because that's like another barrier that we're going to have to get over if we're going to really legitimize this sport. You can't just be in, you know, well, I'm Xbox, I'm PlayStation, I'm Switch, I'm PC.
I was going to say, it's just the master race PC that's going to dominate
it
all.
Well, like, that's the thing is like, are we only going to have professional PC players, or is this something that these companies are going to have to like look for the greater good of all of us? We got to open our networks. There are already a few cross platform. Fortnite's cross platform. Rocket League is cross platform. I'm sure there's a couple more that I don't know. You figure this is an issue they're going to really have to tackle in the near future.
Yeah, I think, you know, you deal with the issue of, you know, what platform you play on, but, you know, like you were talking about new games coming in, I think they're going to have to deal with, you know, what happens when Fortnite becomes like a Donkey Kong. You know, yeah, people love to play Donkey Kong, but you don't see a Donkey Kong esports league. You know, so what do you do when a game becomes irrelevant? You know, does the sport of, you know, Call of Duty or Fortnite go away? So I think, you know, you have to deal with those two variables, which are, you know, pretty up in the air, because, you know, Xbox and PlayStation, and now, you know, Nintendo's coming back in with the Switch. You know, what do you do with that? Because, you know, somebody that plays Xbox isn't going to go play PlayStation, especially in a competitive league. So, you know, how do you deal with that? I think is going to be an issue they have to deal with, and then the game issue as well.
All right. Well, we appreciate you coming on and having a bit of a deep discussion here on some of the topics. Definitely opened up my eye. I wish I had some video game talent to actually go wager a bet.
Taylor never stopped me from throwing a 20 down on that shit, motherfucker. Come get some. Come fucking get some.
There you go. Get in their head, trash
talk. Taylor has never stopped me from trying to whoop somebody's ass in something.
Well, I would just call that a poor investment to go ahead and bet on myself. So I'll leave that for a different time, and maybe I'll just invest in backing somebody who actually has talent. But no, I appreciate the conversation, and this whole concept of Players Lounge really was pretty novel to me, and I think Steve too. Didn't know.
Oh, I got some searching to do when I get done, motherfuckers.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm gonna see what's real. I'm gonna see what's really good on this shit.
But yeah, thanks again, Grant, for coming on, and anytime you want to come and talk over some video game chat.
Yeah, as your career evolves, if you get, you get your streaming services up and going, you get all your future endeavors up, and just make sure to keep the Nerd Cantina in mind. Yep. And shoot us an email.
Thank you, guys.